And I am telling you, I'm not going. You're the best man I'll ever know. There's no way I can ever go. No, no, there's no way. No, 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 no way. I'm living without you. I'm not living without you. I don't wanna be free.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. We are back for another week to discuss...
Was there music?
Glee. Did you not hear the music?
I did not hear music. Oh. I was like, awkward silence.
Awkward silence. maybe I'll see if I can fix that here in the next couple seconds.
Okay. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, I think... Right off the top of the show, how was Comic-Con? Tell me more.
Comic-Con was a blast. We had an absolutely great time. And we actually talked at great length on our other podcast, over at The Idol Review, www.theidolreview.com. You can check out our other show there. But we talked at great length about the experience of going to Comic-Con and all that stuff. But we did, on the last day, get to attend the Glee panel. And
We fought our way into the Glee panel.
We
stood in line in the hot sun for over an hour outside, just to stand in line inside for a half hour, just to sit through a panel right before it.
Yes.
Because it's the only way you can get into these things. But it was worth every second of it.
Well, let's just dive right in. I mean, we can go ahead and talk right now about... Ed, can you hear the music now?
Yes.
Awesome. And can you say something real quick so I can make sure it's still recording you?
I am talking, and I'm excited to hear about what you have to say.
Awesome.
Like, if I'm not talking.
the Glee panel was crazy. Comic-Con as itself is... wild. And the big change in the last couple years of Comic-Con is that the panels have gotten huge. Jennifer and I have been going long enough that we remember when the panels were little bitty, and no matter how significant the guests were, you could pretty much just walk in and grab a seat, and there were usually like the front two rows just empty because people were too afraid to sit there. But now that's like a thing of the past. So for the Glee panel, what we had to do was on Sunday afternoon, we went really early to try to get into the castle panel, and we weren't able to. And so then we got in this huge line, and we waited in that. We waited in that line for about 2 hours. You think?
About an hour and a half. Yeah.
About an hour and a half, 2 hours. We waited in that line, and then we finally got into the room as the American Dad panel was starting, and we sat through the American Dad panel, and then camped out in our chairs for, 15 minutes while they changed over the room and the Glee panel started. And they don't sweep the room. When I say change over the room, like, they just kind of move the stage around.
They change the names on the tables. That is pretty much it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But it was wild. Honestly, I have to admit that the American Dad panel sucked much less than I had expected.
it wasn't bad. I'd never watched a full episode before, and this one was funny and offensive and sure to piss off a lot of people.
No, it was funny because they showed the Christmas episode, which is hilarious to be watching that in July.
Yeah.
The Glee panel consisted of... They said they wanted to bring all the people that they weren't able to bring last year. So essentially, the Glee panel was Naya Rivera, Heather Morris, Tina.
Yes.
Jenna Ushkowitz, Kevin McHale, Chris Colfer, Amber Riley, an executive producer whose name I don't remember, and Ryan Murphy, because he's always there. Ryan Murphy was dressed so that his outfit coordinated with the backdrop, which is awesome.
Yes. We'll have the pictures online.
Yes, the traditional Comic-Con backdrop is just kind of the logo, and the logo is black, white, gray. Yeah, black, white, gray, and yellow. And there's Ryan Murphy sitting up there in a black and white checkered shirt and a yellow cap.
A bright yellow cap, but he looked great.
He totally fit. It was awesome.
He blended in.
But it was fun. I mean, this is my fourth Glee Q&A, and it was the first time I got to see Naya and Heather. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun. They seemed pretty surprised that they got a chance to talk. I get the sense that they're just now kind of getting to participate in these big events. So that was really exciting. But it was cool. I mean, the panel, we'll go through some of the things they mentioned. These are a bit spoilery. I mean, they're not really spoilery because everything is, you know, debatable, but, it's a bit spoilery, so, you know, be on guard if you don't like that type of stuff, but I'm pretty sensitive about spoilers and they didn't bother me. So,
yeah, and honestly, these are out there everywhere you go right now. So, I mean, it's not like you wouldn't have heard this or seen this anywhere else. But yeah, there's some stuff for the upcoming season.
And, you know, I've been talking for a little bit. Jennifer, how did you feel about the Glee panel? Like, this is your third Glee panel now.
I know.
How did you feel about the Q&A?
I thought it was great. I really liked it. They're so comfortable with one another. Even the moderator did a really good job of engaging everybody in conversation by directing, you know, something at them at one point. And even if it was just kind of making a statement and they reacted. But, It was really well balanced. I liked the things that they talked about. I liked the way they talked about the upcoming season and the character development. And, you know, yeah, there were a few little spoiler teases about, you know, some of the stuff they're going to cover. So that was fun.
I'm actually surprised how much information Ryan Murphy will give out. Like, Ryan Murphy will pretty much answer any question you ask him,
yeah.
Which going to, like, a Lost Q&A is exactly the opposite. Like, no matter what you ask, you get a maybe.
No matter how many questions you ask him, I feel like Ryan Murphy will have, based on the season one anyways, will have the plot twisting so much that just finding out about something, it won't even be important. It's like, oh, yeah, that's happening, but whatever.
Well, the other thing, too, is that people tend to ask really stupid questions in a Q&A. Like a person will ask a question, like, are we ever going to meet Rachel's gay dads? And of course, Ryan Murphy's going to say yes. Well, of course, but the thing is any question that starts with, are we ever, is the answer's 100% of the time going to be yes, because he could be doing this show for 12 years. Like, you know,
well, he'll are we ever going to see Rachel die? Maybe not.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's just as easy for him to be like, well, I'm signed for 3 years, so it could happen. I mean, his answer is always, well, of course, maybe.
Well, maybe, well, then see, you need to ask more specific questions, like, will we meet Rachel's dad this season?
Exactly.
In the first half of this season.
Well, and, you know, or something like, what can you tell me about Rachel's gay dads? Or something like that. But people just ask these extremely open-ended questions. Like, one of the questions was, you did so much music from the last 30 years of Broadway. Will we ever see any music from the golden age of Broadway? And of course, he's like, well, yeah, I guess maybe someday. But then he asks the kid, wait, and then the kid's like, cool. And he starts to walk away. And Ryan Murphy goes, wait, what would you want to hear them sing? And the kid just like had no response. Stagecoach?
Yeah, I mean, he threw out a couple and then they're like, yeah, you know, that would be cool. Oh, it'd be fun to do this. So, I mean, whether or not they were planning on doing it, who knows, but it definitely gets them thinking about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of questions that you can ask about the previous season. Like, it would be great to hear, you know, discussions of different plot points or just kind of what are your favorite numbers and things like that. But people always want to ask, like, tell me the future. Like, tell me what we haven't seen yet. And yet, when you do that at a Lost panel, they just go, eh, no, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to answer that anyway. And with Ryan Murphy, his answer is always like, maybe. Could happen.
Yeah, why not? That sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. That's plausible. I'm open to anything. But I have to say, the first question right off the top, and I haven't seen this written up a lot in the reviews. By the way, the guy who moderated it, you had said he was so good. It's Entertainment Weekly's Tim Stack, who was a great moderator and deserves to be mentioned, especially with that many people.
Exactly. So he was really good to make sure everybody got some time. But and he didn't try to make it about him, and he wasn't gushing. He wasn't just going on and like, oh my God, I'm a fan and da da da, and I love when you do this. It was just, he was perfect at just keeping the conversation going.
Yeah. So they played a clip before it started, and the clip, excuse me, it was like a highlight reel of season one. And one of the clips that they played was the scene in the basement of Kurt's house after Kurt has redecorated the basement for he and Finn. And Finn, you know, describes it in such a way and uses the other F word, I guess. Yeah. And Mike O'Malley comes down, Bert comes down and chews him out, and the audience applauded. The first question when they go to the Q&A is a guy says to Ryan Murphy, Finn had every right to be angry, is his comment. He says, Finn had every right to be angry in that situation, and Kurt owed him an apology. And will we ever see that apology? And it was so awkward.
Yeah.
the whole room just kind of went, oh, crap. Like, this is not. And he asked it really aggressively. Like, I mean, there are nice ways to ask that question. And he was very aggressive in how he kind of came onto the mic. But Ryan Murphy, like, to his credit, was just like, hey, I'm actually glad you asked that. Because, yeah, you know, we have been taking a lot of heat on that scene. And what I keep telling people is, like, there's a lot more episodes to this show. And just because we had to move on to other things doesn't mean we aren't going to come back to that or that we haven't always been meaning to come back to that. And he said that very early in the second season, we will see them come back to that discussion and, you know, kind of experience that. Now, whether or not that was always their intent, I don't know. But Ryan Murphy does seem to be, like, he didn't shy away from this concept. And we've discussed this on the show before, like, who was in the right? Was Kurt in the right? Was Finn in the, you know, in the wrong as much as he took the heat for it? And it was very interesting to hear Ryan just kind of go like, no, we will, you know, we will see more on that dynamic. And we will see those characters continue to discuss this issue. It's not just in the past now. So that was pretty fascinating. And then even Chris Colfer weighed in on it later after the conversation had moved pretty far away from that. Chris Colfer got a chance to talk and he said, you know, I want to go back to that and just say, Kurt has been through so much. He said, Kurt had been through so much in season one. He kind of saw his opportunity to go for something, to really achieve what he deeply wanted and just went 100% to it. And even though he kind of went too far, it's like, you know, give him a little, cut him a little slack,
right,
was his comment.
And basically what he's saying, you know, from his standpoint is that, you know, yeah, maybe Kurt needs to apologize for going too far, but not for having feelings and not for, you know, in his eyes, he didn't think that he did anything wrong.
Yeah.
Exactly. At least that's the interpretation I got from it.
That's the interpretation I had as well.
Yeah. And it was good. I mean, it was a very, very open discussion. I mean, I guess I didn't take the guy's question as being kind of aggressive. I took him, what I heard in his voice was him being nervous.
That's true. I mean, he might have been
a little brisk in his presentation of it, but I didn't take it as aggression. I took it as more nerves.
I was actually really surprised they let him ask that question because this is Ballroom 20, which, Ed, one year you will fly out here for Comic-Con, even if I have to freaking pay for it, which is not going to happen anytime soon. Just don't get your hopes up. But I'm just saying.
I'm willing to go if you're willing to pay.
It is so much fun.
We'll get you a press badge.
Yeah, you can totally get a press badge.
That's $100 right there.
You just have to fly yourself out. When you go, like, the two largest venues, or yeah, the two largest venues are Ballroom 20, which is 2,500 seats, and Hall H, which is 6,000 seats. And this was in Ballroom 20. Last year, it was in a different venue. It was actually not in the convention center where all of Comic-Con, and it was next door in a hotel.
That was like a 1,000 seat theater.
Yeah, it was like a fraction of the size, and they still packed this. This year, they managed to pack this 2,500 seat room. Last year, they packed it, but I think the one immediately after them was Smallville, so people were more just camping out for Smallville.
It Heroes.
Heroes. It was Heroes. Heroes.
But yeah, we barely got into that one. We just ended up sitting on the floor in the aisles, and there were a lot of people that were complaining that they didn't get into this particular panel
this year.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that didn't get in.
But the surprising thing to me is that at the big rooms like Ballroom 20 and Hall H, you actually have to preface your question. Like, you have to run your question by an attendant, and they tell you whether or not they will allow you to ask it. And I was actually kind of surprised that the attendant allowed them to ask that question, because there's a good chance that could have gone a different direction. But to their credit, they let him go, and it was a great conversation. So it was nice to see that come up, because it's something that we've discussed so much, and our listeners have discussed so much. But, you know, on to other things. We had more talk about the reducing number of musical numbers. They're saying that the musical numbers are going to come down from 8 and be about 5 musical numbers per episode, which some of the audience was very disappointed by. We also had there will be a split up between Tina and Artie. There will be some rockiness there.
It's
all over the internet, so okay. You can't really get away with it. Essentially, Tina's going to fall in love with Mike Chang, they say.
Yeah, I heard that.
Which,
yeah, no, this is all going to be old news. So
yeah, to
I'm
which Kevin
too
McHale
bad.
Reacted by moving closer to Amber Riley and saying, I can fall out of love too. So that was pretty great.
And Amber was like, I'm good with that.
lots more discussion of Britney getting an episode and a song. Everyone's very excited.
The Britney-themed episode.
In the Britney-themed episode. Ryan Murphy had said the entire inspiration for doing a Britney Spears-themed episode was that in an interview, someone asked Matthew Morrison if he would ever sing a Britney Spears song on the show, and Matthew Morrison's comment was, I don't want to do Britney. And so Ryan Murphy said that's pretty much the plot of the episode, is they are just going to be chasing around Mr. Schuster, who keeps saying, I don't want to do Britney. I don't think we should do Britney. So that was very funny. So they asked the cast what they wanted, what songs they would like to sing. And everybody said, you know, we want to sing what they give us. But Chris Culver actually said he wants to sing The Time Warp. And Ryan Murphy said, funnily enough, we are doing a Rocky Horror episode. I proceeded to get an email from a listener within 10 minutes of that announcement.
Oh, God.
So apparently, I'm forgetting which listener that was, but you were on it, dude. I was impressed that you got that so quickly. A couple other ones. We will be going to Amber Riley's church in season 2, so that's very exciting.
And we're going to meet her parents, or her dad, they said.
There was a lot of talk about meeting parents and such. And Ryan Murphy made the comment about Britney and Santana. He said, we're writing an episode where we're debating whether or not they should kiss. And so we shall see if we actually get to watch that take place. Now, again, we call these spoilers, but within the context of Glee and Ryan Murphy, you never quite know what he's going to come up with. You have to take it all worth a grain of salt, but it's definitely exciting to look forward to. Other things that are less spoilery, when they were talking to Chris Colfer, they asked him, how are you different from Kurt? And he said that he's a big dork. And he said, I don't care for 10-inch heels. And he had no idea who Marc Jacobs was when they shot the pilot.
Yes, he said that that Kurt's much more confident, and that he was a total geek.
Yeah, that he was wearing a Transformers T-shirt in the Q&A. I think my personal favorite, though, of the whole panel was when they asked him, who is more intimidating to sing for, President Obama or Oprah? And they all said Oprah.
And there wasn't even a hesitation. And they even got nervous answering the question. It was really funny because it was an, Oprah. But like, the White House was cool, but, you know, yeah, Oprah.
And, of course, everyone wants to see Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel in on the show together. Everyone, every panel I've been to, they all want to say, we want to see, you know, when are we going to get Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth doing a duet on the show? So we're just going to come out and say, everything we've read is they don't actually like each other. Everything I've read on the internet, everything Jennifer's told me, they don't actually like each other. And there's probably not going to happen. That said, I have heard several times that they will both be in the second season at one point or another.
Yes.
Kristen Chenoweth, definitely. They've already written an episode for her, I've been told. But seriously.
Well, Ryan Murphy was saying that they'll... The question actually posed is, will they be back or will they be regulars? And he said that both of them just have so much going on and very busy schedules. They both will appear at some point in the season. So
you know, it was a really good time. If you ever get a chance to go to Comic-Con, we should just do a show of our other podcast just talking about how, like, what you have to do to survive Comic-Con. Yeah. It's such a crazy experience.
Oh, I guess the other big thing is that they're going to be following the Super Bowl next year.
Yes, they got the
huge
episode after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so.
And he was saying, like, yeah, football and musical theater, like two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it for the Glee panel. Ed, did you read anything else that we might have missed about the Glee panel?
I'm sure it's out there.
I think you covered in a lot. the only thing, but this, I don't know if this was Comic-Con related, but I hear that Glee is hosting some award show.
Yes, well, we are just about to move on to Glee news, so let's dive right into that. The Boys of Glee.
I work for the show. I like know we're doing that.
You're segging, baby. That's what that's called. The Men of Glee are going to host the Teen Choice Awards. All of the men, actually. Kevin McHale, Chris Colfer, Corey Monteith, and Mark Salling will be hosting the Teen Choice Awards along with Katy Perry, which is kind of hilarious. but I've never watched the Teen Choice Awards. Ed, do you know anything about the Teen Choice Awards?
I used to watch it, but not like in the past half decade anyways. So, I mean, that's good for them. I mean, get your name out there. Because when this all wraps up in 10 years, you're going to want a job. You need to get some cred out there.
It's true. Also expected to attend, Sandra Bullock will be there. Robert Pattinson, Ashley Greene, and Leighton Meester will all attend. And I also like that in this article, a listener sent us, listener, give them credit. Listener Jonathan sent us this article from US News. It ends with nominees Jason Derulo and Travie McCoy will perform, and the Kardashian sisters Kristen Bell and Zac Efron will be in the audience. So apparently not that many people attend the Teen Choice Awards that they're able to tell us who will be in the audience. But, you know, congratulations to them for whoever watches it, because I'm sure as heck not going to sit through that. You should totally let us know how it is. Jennifer, will you watch the Teen Choice Awards?
You know what? I might. Years ago, I went to the Blockbuster Awards, and they used to do something that was kind of similar to this. They used to actually televise it too, but they don't anymore. But it was one of those things where they couldn't really say who was going to be there because they didn't really know until the day of. I mean, it's one of those things that you put every invite out there and you hope that everybody's going to show, but they don't.
Yeah.
So you can only promote certain names, and that's usually if you can get them agree to, like, give an award or something. But, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more celebrity than that. but you know what? I might check it out this year.
You never know.
What the heck? I like award shows.
You do like award shows.
I like seeing what people wear.
Is that the one where they slime people?
That's the
Kids Choice Awards.
That's
the Kids Choice
Awards.
So lots of talk on the internet about Lea Michele possibly auditioning for the 2012 Broadway revival of Funny Girl. She should go ahead and audition for that because the world's not going to be around in 20. I'm joking.
Dark place.
But yes, you know, it's great how much coverage this story has gotten. Lea Michele might audition for a part in a show that would run in 2012. You know, she
does she have to audition?
You know, I guess not. She could probably just go down. In a new interview with the New York Times, Bob Boyett, who's producing the 2012 Broadway revival of Funny Girl, sang the praises of Michelle, whose character Rachel Berry is obsessed with the Oscar-winning legend. This is off of TVSquad.com by Rich Keller. Quote, I think Leah is wonderful, she's great, and she would certainly be on anybody's list. So, seriously.
Would they even be able to, could she do both? Like, is it possible?
Well, it's 2012. I mean, if it's late 2012, technically her character will have graduated by then. She might not even be on the show.
But, don't leave us. We love you.
Is that a comment or was that just sadness?
That was just sadness. I was like, I mean, we all knew she was going to graduate and go to college. But there was always that hope that maybe it would continue into the college years, a la the OC, which failed soon after. So maybe not. Maybe not.
That's right there is more of the OC than I ever watched. So, in other future Glee news, Coach Tanaka is supposedly not returning for season 2. This was reported in TV Guide magazine. Dot Jones, the actress Dot Jones, has been hired as William McKinley High's new football coach, Shannon Beastie.
So were we done with this storyline? I didn't think we were, but apparently Ryan Murphy half decided we are. So.
Well, we saw him only one time in the back, 12 episodes, or after the back 9, we only saw him one time where they showed him eating and how his character had become really fat. But I think we pretty much were done with him. I mean, after Emma didn't show up to the wedding, that was the last time we really talked to Coach Tanaka. I mean, honestly, Jennifer, will you miss Coach Tanaka? Do you think his exit will create a giant gap in the show?
No, it's been so long since there's been anything between him and Emma, and at this point, it's, you know, I think it's just easier if he's not around. I think bringing him in and then explaining why he's been so absent would be kind of odd.
But what Acapella's?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I suppose he could still be an Acapella's, but not coach the football team.
That's true. It would be awesome to see Acapella's come back with Henri, and that would be cool.
Henri?
Well, that was his character name, was Henri.
I thought it was Henry.
They called him Henri.
They called it Henri, yeah.
Wow. He had no thumbs.
I'm thinking of the clerk from Linens and stuff.
Sheets and Things.
What was his name?
I'm forgetting
his name.
His
name was Henry. Okay, I'll look him up. Again.
This all comes down to our topic for the next episode, which we will get to at the end of this one. That's pretty much all the Glee news. That's pretty much all the Glee news I have. Am I forgetting anything, guys? Anything you can pull up off the top of your heads?
Well, there's Cheyenne Jackson, I guess, is going to be joining the cast.
I had not read that. Ed, did you hear about Cheyenne joining the cast?
I've heard about that, but I feel like I hear rumors daily of stars joining the cast, leaving the cast. I take it all with the largest grain of salt. So sure it's possible. Why her and everyone else in Hollywood wants a spot. So.
Cheyenne's actually a guy, but
oh my god, wow. Who am I thinking of? There's some blonde girl.
Well, Cheyenne, there's a character named Cheyenne on Reba.
No, that is what I'm thinking of.
Cheyenne Jackson is a Canadian actor. He's an incredible singer. Yeah. He's best known to television audiences as he was the hot guy on 30 Rock last season, the like new cast member that they hired. Musical theater geeks have known about him for years, particularly he's on the soundtrack for Xanadu the musical, which don't get me started. But
please.
You've heard me rant.
What's wrong with Xanadu?
Short version. Xanadu the movie is considered one of the worst movies ever made. They're wrong. Xanadu the movie is awesome. And the music is fantastic. It's all by ELO. It's performed by Cliff Richards and Olivia Newton-John. The music in Xanadu the movie is badass. The problem with Xanadu the musical is they don't take Xanadu the movie serious enough, and they kind of make it all tongue-in-cheeky and goofy. And that bugs me because I really like the movie.
I wonder why they would take it tongue-in-cheeky goofy.
Because most people think that movie's horrible.
Oh my god. It's,
the movie is set in a, or the play is set in a roller rink. The whole show is done on roller skates.
Well, yeah.
But still, it's so good, man. The song's, damn. So let's talk about Amber Riley, shall we? Here's a bit
sure.
of... Here's a bit of Amber Riley, who pursues Mercedes Jones. One of her big numbers from the show. I know this is one of your favorites, Ed. Let's go ahead, as my computer pulls it up here, and take a listen to Bust Your Windows.
Oh, yeah, that was like, which one did you think is my favorite?
There we go.
Yes, correct.
It's hard to listen to that song and not, you know,
dance
a little bit.
That's what I was doing.
Throw a little attitude around. It's definitely, it's a attitude-filled song. I have to admit, that's probably, it could be my favorite performance from the Glee Tour. When they brought out an actual Escalade on stage and danced around the Escalade, and then Amber Riley climbed up on top of it and vamped on the hood, and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That number was one of the bigger, like, production moments of that, where I went, oh my god, they just put an Escalade on stage. And she sounds so amazing on stage.
Yeah.
It was so amazing live. So Amber Riley, who performs Mercedes, she is 24 years old. That is older than I thought she would be. Is that surprising to either of you guys?
No.
I mean, I thought she's about 22.
Hmm. Ed, not surprised at all?
Not ages don't surprise me anyway.
Ages don't surprise me. her photo on Wikipedia is actually from the Comic-Con convention over the weekend, so they updated that very quickly. Her middle name is Patrice. Totally unnecessary factoid. She was actually from La Mirada, California, which is right around the corner here. I believe that's also the hometown of the guy who wore the glasses this season on American Idol. The one that did...
Oh,
the
God,
one that
yep.
Never
rose to his expectations.
Yeah, lived up to his expectations.
Yeah.
In 2007, now this is according to her Wikipedia page, so no one really knows if this is true 100%, but according to Wikipedia, in 2007, she auditioned for the part of Effie in the Dreamgirls movie, but was refused solely because of her age. But she did go on to perform, and I'm telling you, I'm not going in her audition for Glee. Apparently, that was a request by Ryan Murphy. She went in and performed a Chaka Khan song, and Ryan Murphy said, you know, that was good, but can you give me, and I'm telling you, I'm not going, and she performed it. Needless to say, you know, the way she does it on Glee, there's no question that was the song she was born to sing.
Oh, yeah.
So we actually did get an email about her performance of And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going, if I can find it here, from listener Sergio. Listener Sergio says, I will be personally offended if you guys don't give Mercedes Jones the praise she deserves for her version of And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going. I let it slide the first time, but now that you guys are doing an episode on it, it's time. I mean, she's third on the list of top three women who hit that song out of the park, but still. Now, she's third. I can think of a fourth, but that's only because I'm a big musical theater nerd. I don't think most people can think of three, quite frankly. Jennifer, three people that recorded and I'm telling you I'm not going.
Don't do this to me. I don't.
Ed, three people that recorded it, I'm telling you I'm not going.
I'm pulling up lots of Idol names in my head, but do they count? I don't know.
Well, it's only been performed on Idol once. Well, Lakeisha Jackson performed it in like season 8.
Lakeisha Jones. But there's other places that I think it was performed.
Obviously you've got the original Broadway cast, Jennifer, whose name I don't remember, who was the number one by far, Jennifer Hudson, who performed it on the soundtrack, Amber Riley, the girl who, that was her signature song on the first season of America's Got Talent. Still, to Sergio's credit, it was a fantastic performance, and you know, I don't want to fault Amber or anything. Jennifer, do you have a favorite Amber Riley performance?
Well, I liked I smashed the windows of your car.
Bust your windows,
sorry. I liked that a lot. But then I really liked the duet that she did with Santana.
That was pretty cool of The Boy Is Mine. Ed, would you go, is your favorite Bust Your Windows? Would you go there as well?
It would definitely be up there. I do like The Boy Is Mine a lot, too. Like me, some attitude, I guess. Side note, Norman Gentle also performed, and I'm telling you,
that's
on
true.
American.
Wow!
There you go.
But good was catch. That was that an actual performance?
Yeah,
serious performance.
No. Okay, I never performed it, but I'm sorry. Was that during a competition, or was he doing that after? I can't remember.
Yeah, he performed it on the show.
While he was competing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was just when he came back for the finale show or something.
He performed it, I think, three times. Okay. Yeah, Norman Gentle. So getting back to Amber Riley, they actually asked her in the Q&A at Comic-Con this weekend, they asked her what was her favorite song to sing on the show. And everybody always goes like, my favorite one is the one I'm performing when I'm performing it. But her favorite one, and also my favorite Mercedes performance, is Somebody to Love. And here is a bit of that from, I believe it's the Roads Less Traveled episode. It's wild that she doesn't even come up until the end of the song, because I always think of that as still her song.
I don't know so why you would think that.
I do. I mean, when I think of Somebody to Love, I think of her moment. Like, that's when the song is really great. She said it was her favorite, too. Lol. Cute. So obviously we know Amber best as Mercedes Jones, the resident diva on the show. Her first quote on the show, I believe, is, I am Beyonce, I ain't no Kelly Rowland, in comparing herself to Rachel.
I think her first, I think her first line was, my name is Mercedes and I'm singing
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I think that was her first line. But that pilot episode's so good. You got me all thinking about it. I got some Twitter. Are we recording? So
yes, we are. Yes, we're recording. Yes, you had asked some questions on your Twitter for people that had Mercedes memories.
Yes, I threw out to my Twitter followers, and some of which like Gleeful. So, and I Am Floyd's mom said that her favorite moment for Mercedes was when she decided that she fell in love with Kurt in the second episode, which led to Bust Your Windows, so very good choice. Katarina enjoyed the Boy Is Mine duet with Santana. Otayan really loved I Am Beautiful. Crest of Waves enjoyed Hate on Me. And Beaver Fever 87 says her favorite quote was, I ain't no Kelly Rowland. And there was another quote. Really enjoyed when, I believe it was the pilot episode, and they were like doing Rock the Boat. No, I don't know. They were doing something. And then Rachel was doing exaggerated kick. And she's like, you bust, try to bust my face again, I will cut you. So I think the consensus is we all enjoy Mercedes with attitude. Mercedes, like, Mercedes home, that was a good, or, what was that? No, smile. She did smile.
Yes.
She was the main vocalist and smile. Like, it was good. She's very good at it, but the moments that are Mercedes inspiring have a little twinge of attitude. So it's pretty, I don't know. That's the ones I remember anyway, but I just discovered that, I don't know. I just like people.
Well, like listener Aubrey emailed in and said her favorite moment is whenever she's with Kurt, and she and Kurt, as they say on the show, create a culture, or
that Sue Sylvester quote.
Yeah, Sue Sylvester's quote was Sue Sylvester said, "How do you two not have a show on Bravo?" And there is a certain way where they make each other softer. You know, Kurt and Mercedes are definitely, if you met them in person, I think they would be reasonably hard to get along with. But somehow the two of them, like, make the other likable for me. And I find that very precious. Jennifer, do you have a favorite Mercedes moment?
I guess I have to say that in the latter part of the season, her interactions with Quinn. I was really liking that. I mean, you talk about seeing a softer side to her, and mm-hmm. She was showing a vulnerable side when she was, you know, going for the Cheerios and kind of falling apart there a little bit. And, you don't know, just I really liked the way their relationship was evolving.
The softer moments of Mercedes later in the season were, I found them very welcome. Ed, do you still prefer her with attitude, or did you appreciate the softer
moments? Those scenes mainly existent solely for the fact that Quinn was pregnant and there was nothing else for her to do. So I personally did not, like, I'm not going to go back to watch those episodes to see Mercedes and Quinn be all friendly, so I don't know. I mean, I'll rewatch the episodes, but it's not for that.
Not for that. Well, listener Heather also emailed in, and she said her favorite Mercedes moment was when in the episode Mashup, where there was a slushie flying at the various Glee members, and Mercedes shouted, "My weave!" Yeah, exactly. Ed, did you say your favorite Mercedes moment, Ed?
I well, pretty much the one that we've already been discussed. Like,
okay.
Anything with Mercedes having a little bit of attitude, always. have we like gone through Mercedes' story throughout the season, or do we want to do that, or did we already do that?
I don't know. I mean, we've kind of pieced it together, but if you want to go ahead and kind of tell Mercedes' story, what's your read on how far she's come?
Okay, so Mercedes, she's kind of, in the beginning, pilot, she was like a diva wannabe. She just, and as stressed in episode 12 Mattress, the second she gets her recording contract, she's not talking to them. But that's kind of like her original mentality. But as she gets closer with Glee and she becomes more attached to them, like as demonstrated in episode 3, Acapellas, when that guy, the Hobbit guy, tries to like make everyone become Cheerios or whatever, essentially, and she like quits with them, like she feels a sense of unity with them, with the Glees, and
with
and
the Glees.
She's, although she feels pushed aside just for the diva notes at the end of song Somebody to Love, etc., she's finding peace with this, but would prefer more starring moments. So it's like she's been suppressed. Her diva-ness has been suppressed a little bit, but it still triples through every so often. So there you go. I guess that's the Mercedes.
I mean, I wouldn't say that her diva-ness has been suppressed. I mean, I'd say that it's more kind of Well, I was about to say her divaness, she's kind of grown past it, yeah, or started to grow past
more
it.
Mature
but
in
yeah,
some
that's
way.
That is kind of making the comment that being a diva is a childish way to behave, which I can't say I disagree with, but I don't want to, you know, make that assumption.
I mean, the way I always took it from her was more of a defense mechanism, kind of like, you don't get to judge me. You don't get to think you know who I am. This is who I am. And, you know, until you actually know me, mm-hmm. you know, this is who you're going to get. So to me, I always took it as a defense thing, not a childish thing.
But that makes a great point. You know, as far as her reception from the critics, Brian Brockington for the New York Post has written that this is I can't find when this article was written, but he said the key to Glee's success lies directly within the female leads, and he praised Amber Riley as Mercedes. And a lot of people kind of were happy when she got more to do and more to say. Tim Stack of Entertainment Weekly said that he prefers any episode where they get to shine on previously more minor characters. There has been some criticism of some of her behavior. Eric Goldman and IGM criticized Mercedes when Puck confessed to her that he's the father of Quinn's baby, and Mercedes didn't do anything about it. People were saying, you know, like Eric Goldman said, quote, really? She doesn't think Finn should know he's not really the dad?
Yeah, but she, well, in that, I think we said this before, but I feel like she was more Quinn's friend than Finn's friend. So if she was just going with whatever Quinn thought was best, because I mean, it's gray territory, but that's just what it was.
And a lot of people have said the great failing in her character is that she did, like, how could anybody not know that Kurt was gay? So
that was one episode, people.
It is one episode. I'll give you that. And at the end of the day, it's television.
It fired so. Buster Windows. It was a necessary challenge.
That's pretty much all I have to say about Mercedes, guys. Do you have anything else about Mercedes or Amber Riley? All right. Well, before we go, let's go ahead and listen to one more of her classic songs. Not before we go for the show. We'll be right back. But let's give a listen to it's any excuse to re-listen to some good Glee music. Let's give a quick listen to Beautiful. This is one of the highlights of the concert tour as well. I'm sure they're going to release that on a special feature at some point. But here is Beautiful with, of course, Amber Riley on lead.
Every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then I get insecure from all the pain. I'm so ashamed. I am beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring me down. I am beautiful in every single way. Yes, words can't bring me down. Oh no. So don't you bring me down today.
So that's pretty much it for us. Ed, did you want to thank some iTunes reviewers?
Sure. Hold on. I was up and then I took it down. That was okay. Lily Jenny Mac. Oh my god. Lil Jenny Mac. Theater Chick. Mist 1997. Glee Lover 97. Lindsay 1062. The person that is Nada. And don't think I don't see you keep continually re-reviewing us. All 5 stars. So Hillary Duff Lover, Emmy XXOXO, and I think I'm up to date with that. So thank you for the reviews. Don't forget to review us if you haven't. And
definitely review us if you can. If you'd like to weigh in on anything we said today, you can email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can check out the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com. And you can check out the Facebook fan page if you search for Gleeful. I also want to send out a shout out to listener CJ, who describes herself as, or describes themselves as, a gleezer from Toronto. I said, and I'll say it again, I think that you shouldn't sell yourself short, because when I watch Glee, we all feel like we're in high school. So that's pretty much it for us from the Gleeful Podcast. I've been Josh.
I'm Jen.
I've been Ed. Peace out on Glee. Don't we want to say what we're doing next week?
Next week we will be discussing the pilot.
Is that all we're discussing?
That's all we're discussing. We're going to go back and rewatch the pilot.
Okay.
And
the pilot.
So weigh in on the pilot. We'll discuss that next episode. And until then, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Sorry.
I'm Peter Zane.
Oh, don't you bring me down today. Don't you bring me down today.